Welcome to Gonkcast, an Autechr podcast. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this is another bonus episode about your emails. We worked a bunch of your really excellent emails into our last episode on Chiastic Slide, Envane, and Sickly Suite, but we got a few too many and a few on releases we covered in earlier episodes as well, so we're going to talk about them now. Plus, as a bonus within this bonus, we're going to spend some time on Autechr's first Peel Session EP, released in 1999 but recorded in 1995. First, I want to mention that our next episode will be on LP5 and EP7. I know there are fans who are very passionate about these releases, but we haven't received many emails on them at all. So send us your thoughts, gonkcastpod@gmail.com, or tweet us at gonkcastpod. We are very curious to hear what you all think about LP5 and EP7, but you can also write to us about any Autechr release we've already covered or are going to cover. Again, that's gonkcastpod@gmail.com. You'll find our email address and Twitter handle in the show notes of every episode. Okay, so we were already planning to add Autechr's first Peel Session to this bonus episode, but we thought we should shout out listener Chris, who wrote us saying, "Please include the Peel Session EPs. They are both stellar in their own right, and for me personally, hold a special place. Inhake 2 alone is worth it." We'll get to the second Peel Session on a future episode, but for now, Dan, tell us what background information we need to know about the first.
Yeah, so the legendary John Peel was an avid supporter of many of Warp's artists, including Autechr, and he broadcast Autechr's first Peel Session on October 13th, 1995, though the duo had recorded it back on August 30th. The session was then bootlegged to hell until Warp finally decided to give it an official release on January 11th, 1999. It's been quite well received overall. It's currently got a 3.52 average rating on Rate Your Music, but the last track, Drain, is widely considered a highlight of Autechr's entire discography.
Yeah. So, what did you think of the Peel Session? Was it sort of new to you?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever listened to it outside of the box set, the EP, box set collection. So it's definitely the first time listening to it on its own merits.
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to Drain a lot, actually. I've always known that it's a big highlight, but I guess I've never really spent much time with it. I mean, I got to say, I must have been feeling like a lot of people were feeling in 1999 in that, because we're preparing for our LP5 EP7 episode. So I'm listening to those two releases over and over again and then throwing in the Peel Session here and there. It's like so exciting to hear like classic tri-rep era Autechr in the context of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of strange, you know?
Yeah, but like, I don't know. There's just something classic about that sound. I got to say, I was really enjoying it. I feel like you're being a little cagey. Do you like it?
I didn't want to get straight into shit talking, but I kind of don't love it,
Really?
Yeah. I think the first two tracks are just sort of okay. I don't think it's top tier Autechr or anything here. Drain, I think, is a standout. We'll talk more about it specifically, but I really don't... I don't love it, to be honest.
Very interesting. So maybe you weren't having the same experience as me, because I was like, wow, I just, even just a week later, I really miss, this earlier mid-90s sound of Autechr. But, I'll agree that like Milk DX, the first track, there's only three tracks here, but the first one, it sounds like it's going to become like a garbage sized masterpiece in the beginning, because it's got that like really, it's got these like tumbling bass roll kind of things and like these really glitchy, like crisp rattles and stuff like that. And it never really gets off the ground, It's kind of, it feels a little unfinished, this one. But it is interesting, it's got that like, it's a very Aphex move, I feel like. I can't remember specifically what Aphex tracks he does this, but it's like a weird kind of voice sound, like looping almost. Sounds like a child's voice or something. Interesting. Interesting track.
That's sort of my problem with it. I think you mentioned it on both accounts. It just never really gets off the ground. I think there's interesting things about it. Those rolling sort of grumbly noises are cool, but yeah, that voice is just, that's a very Aphex move, and I don't know, it just kind of gets a little annoying, because it just everything about the song, I've said before on previous podcasts, one thing I love about Autechr is the like minimalism and the repetition and stuff, but I feel like here it's just sort of like a little too static, it's just like once that voice gets going, it just like never goes anywhere. You know, it just sort of like hangs out for, you know, 6 minutes or however long it is, and then it's on to the next one. It feels very unfinished, and just a little, I mean, I don't want to say derivative, but, you know, almost, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I mean, I don't know. We might be taking for granted the fact that, you know, this was recorded before Tri-Repete. And to me, it feels like, you know, we're kind of like, oh, they're doing the Tri-Rep thing again. But it's like, you know, it didn't exactly work that way. But, you know, I feel like that beat is tremendous. And then I do like the, you know, there's kind of like a icy synth pad in there, which is like an amber type move. But it starts like going all tremolo and even like turns into kind of arpeggiating notes a little bit. You know, so it's interesting, not fully developed. What about Inhake 2, which Chris singles out? You know, I think this is a pretty cool song. It's like pure glitch hop style. You know, it's again got kind of a voice-ish sound, like a vocodery type sound that like just lays the funk on thick.
You know, I hate to, you know, since Chris singled this out, I hate to say it, but this is probably my least favorite song on this. And it's
wow.
It's one of my least favorite Ottekers songs in general, I think, you know, outside of Cavity Job or something.
Interesting.
I just, it really just kind of annoys me. Like in listening to this EP, every time this, you know, this was 8.5 minutes, and just kind of every time I was listening to it, I was just ready for it to be done, you know? Like that voice, it's again with the voice, you know, trick. A second time, I also feel like this one doesn't fully get off the ground. Really, like these two tracks, they feel like sort of, you know, if you told me these were scraps from Tri-Repete that, you know, they didn't finish, got cut from, you know, the record. They both kind of feel like that for me, you know? They're just not fully formed. I don't know. That vocal sample really gets kind of on my nerves in Hake 2. You know, the Milk DX one is at least a little better. I think since it's so, you know, kind of choppy and like pitched, it's like that sample is almost like you have to think for a minute. You know, is it just a weird synth sound or is it actually a vocal? You know, there's like almost some question there. Whereas, you know, this one doesn't have that. It's just kind of clearly a vocal sample. Yeah, you know, this, like you said, this one is like sort of trip hop, which I don't know. It's just I like Ottekers for being like so above and beyond everybody else, and I just feel like this is like it's good, but it's, you know, for Ottekers, it's not their best, you know.
Well, I mean, I was feeling like I can't deny that Milk DX doesn't fully develop, but I was feeling like Inhake 2 is pretty awesome. It's you know, it's not like a Ottekers highlight or anything, but, you know, it's just very, I don't know, it's got like a, like West Coast hip hop, but like completely turned upside down in a way that only Ottekers could do. I like how they're like these weird bendy synths. It sounds almost like one of the interlude tracks from Amber or something is like laid on top of this beat, and they start getting like so bendy and like off kilter and stuff. It feels like, I don't know, like it's barely staying within the confines of the track. I mean, there's not much to it, but I feel like it's very, very interesting. But I guess, you know, we're burying the lead, which is Drain, right? I should mention up top, there's a funny anecdote about this track. You know, they made this song, and then I guess I'll let Sean say it. He said, we did the track Drain, which had that exponential speeding up delay thing happening. And then Richard D. James did that bouncing ball track, which is Bucephalus bouncing ball off of the Come to Daddy EP. And Sean says, we answered it with Drain 2, which was the same delay trick, but feeding percussion into it instead as a kind of tease. He said he made a bouncing ball revenge track to it once, but I guess he didn't release it. Probably because we all got better things to do than get into a tricks war.
I really love that. True. Tricks war.
Yeah. But I mean, what do you make of Drain?
You know, I think Drain is the obvious standout here. You know, it honestly makes the EP worth listening to, I think. I feel like the first two tracks, you know, I said I wasn't really a fan of them. I feel like if it wasn't for Drain, this would just like strictly be a completist only, like you gotta hear everything they've released kind of thing, you know. But I think Drain is definitely, you know, worth hearing. And honestly, like with that story with... How do you say that? Bucephalus
bouncing ball.
Yeah, you know, with that story, I mean, because that's got to be one of the more famous, you know, Aphex songs. And I honestly didn't know that until we, you know, prepared for this episode. Yeah. But I think, you know, I think that is like super interesting that they were, you know, to each other or whatever. But this is definitely, you know, the star of the show here. It's the one that feels the most like fully formed. Like this sounds like maybe, you know, where the other ones seemed like songs they were, you know, kind of working on and they didn't make Try Repete or something. Like this feels like a song that like just maybe for some reason didn't fit somewhere, you know, but it feels like done, you know, especially coming in at is the longest song, you know, on this at 10:50. It's just way, I just feel like it's so much more formed than the first two tracks.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a stone cold masterpiece, like absolutely mm-hmm. brilliant. It's, you know, it's amazing if you think about it. Like what is this track, right? It's basically like this kind of hard cut, like static little clips that they're not really like speeding up, but they're, you know, you're kind of getting like a couple hits, like a couple triplets, and then it goes into like a, you know, like 16th mm-hmm. notes and like keeps going longer than you expect it to. It gives it like a weird warp sense of time, this loop. And then running over the whole track is a like droning feedback sound, the pulses of which are speeding up actually exponentially, right? So it like mm-hmm. keeps, it just keeps speeding up until it turns into like just a single, you know, note, and then it starts speeding up again somehow, you know? And so like between those two sounds, this is like the most disorienting, like straight up psychedelic thing that Autechre maybe ever made up to this point. And then there is this absolutely pretty like lullaby, you know, toy box sound, xylophone sound, you know, melody. It kind of reminds me of like Overand off of Try Repete. But, you know, like it's so interesting because it's a sound composition, but the accompaniment is this pretty little lullaby. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about that recently, you know, that's such like a great thing they do. You know, they make these like, you know, great sound designs that are anchored and held together by like actually having, you know, like some pretty music hidden in there, yeah, you know, somewhere. And I think, yeah, Drain is a great example of that. I mean, I honestly wish that the other two tracks were better, like for the sake of Drain, you know. It really is, I think, like you said, you know, a Autechre masterpiece. But I mean, just I just wish it was like somewhere, you know, better. I guess at least it's on that, you know, the EP, you know, box set compilation thing.
Yeah. But I mean, I was kind of feeling like this, you know, the Peel Session is like the anti EP, but better, in the sense that the first two tracks are not essential necessarily, but the last track is a knockout. And yet, in this case, the first two tracks are like pretty good, and then the last track is like 10 times better than Flutter, even.
Yeah, I guess that's
kind of where I was at.
That's a fair, you know, kind of comparison. In fact, you know, we've been doing our rankings. You know, we don't usually say it on the bonus episode, but you know, I did put this just, I put it right below Anti. I kind of like Anti a little better, but it is pretty, you know, neck and neck. I think that's a fair comparison.
Wow. I haven't settled on my placing yet, but I was like, there were points where I was like, do I like this more than Garbage, you know? And I'm worried because I feel like it's just because I'm now feeling a little starved for the Try Repete sound, and like hearing it again, it's so exciting, you know? So
yeah,
I'll let that settle before I decide on it. But I did want to ask you, maybe you'll disagree with this premise, and maybe it won't be so hard for you since you don't like the Peel Session as much as I do, but what do you think is a better year in Autechre's career, 1995 or 1997? If you count this in 1995, since they made it and technically released it, you know, it was broadcast in 1995, you've got the Garbage EP, you got Anvil Vapor, you've got Peel Session, and you've got Try Repete in 1995. In 1997, you got Envain, you got Chiastic, and then you got Sickly Sweet. Which of those years is better?
Oh, man, that's hard. You know, going back to my ranking, if I'm going to be, I mean, even the ranking's hard though, because you know, I have Try Repete as one, I have Chiastic Slide right as number two, but then like Sickly Sweet and Garbage and Anvil Vapor are just mixed up in there, so it's like you know, I can't. There's not a clear winner, you know, going there. I think, and I'm afraid to say it, maybe just because And I talked about this on the last episode, but like a lot of times I, whatever album I'm listening to, just because I'm like you kind of were saying, like starved for, you know, that next, period, yeah. It becomes kind of my favorite. And since, you know, just finished Chiastics, I think I'm going to go 97. I just really liked In Vain and Sickly Sweet and, of course, Chiastic. But I think I'm going to go 97. What about you?
Yeah, I think just by a hair, I'm going to go 97 because I think those EPs are so strong and I'm just not that into Anvil Vapor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
But yeah, I'm very surprised because I think, you know, it's kind of like a must-hear release, right? Because of Drain.
Yeah, I mean that. I think that's what my biggest you know disappointment with those first two tracks. You know, if all three were just okay, you know, it'd be like you know, if you're a fan, completist, whatever, check it out. But it's like I almost want to say like you have to listen to it, but the you know half of the record's not really you know essential, but just the one song is you know.
Wow. Well, let's move on to your emails then, Dan. Why don't you take the first one?
All right, so in addition to his appeal session request, Chris actually shared a bunch of comments on various Autechre-related topics. We'll save some for future episodes, but I wanted to mention his thoughts on, quote, diehards moaning for a more hip-hop record, because it's relevant to our recent Gaz Quarter discussion. Chris writes, I think it's due to comments in the famed We Are the Music Makers interview, but there's a consistent portion of AE fans that seem to be constantly pining for AE to release a more hip-hop-sounding record. It's not a huge deal, but for anyone thinking, man, I just wish they'd make some better hip-hop tracks. I just don't know what the hell they're listening to. Rap beats are woven into so much of the music from the last 10 years. It really permeates the AE live sets, and then there are tunes like Rex on that are just so explicitly hip-hop. I'm always confused when these comments pop up.
Yeah, I think, you know, on one hand, I definitely agree with Chris here. Because there are a lot of tracks that are so hip hop inspired, and Autechre is not averse to doing like a little genre experiment. You know, there'll be like a very acid techno track, but they've like totally, you know, ripped it apart and reassembled it or something like that. But they do some like straight up hip hop stuff, and I'm just sort of left wondering like, well, what do you want then? You just want like a little less weirdness? Like you want a little less Autechre in their hip hop? Like, is that what you're saying? Because they do plenty of hip-hop. On the other hand, though, I start to salivate when I imagine them producing like a full hip-hop record for somebody interesting. You know, I was just sending you, I was texting you the other day about, there's a 2016 interview on Resident Advisor where the interviewer is asking them sort of about this, and they're sort of saying stuff like, yeah, it would have to be somebody pretty weird, you know, that we could work with. And they're like suggesting Young Thug or I think like West Side Gun and stuff. And I do start to salivate when I imagine that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think I, for the most part, agree with Chris here. You know, when people just complain about the hip hop thing, like, yeah, I think even what you said, they're just sort of wanting less weirdness, which, you know, maybe Autechre's not
not for you. Artists.
Yeah, exactly. But then again, yeah, I mean, Young Thug's one of my favorite artists. So, you know, something like that would be awesome and crazy. But I think like they said in the interview and like you alluded to, it's got to be someone weird. You know, if they were just doing a straight, you know, hip hop record with somebody, you know, Drake or something, like that would be awful. You know, it would have to be somebody who could, you know, like, I mean, Danny Brown, I think, would be cool. You know, he's on Warped.
But
now,
it's like, if you think about it, it's like, you know, since they already do make such hip hop inspired stuff, all that a hip hop record from them would be them toning it down, you know?
And yeah,
like,
basically.
Do you really want to hear that?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, next email. We received a couple humorous AE stories, actually, a couple emails that I think are worth reading in full. The first one is from Spencer, who writes, recently, I've went through the entirety of Autechre's discography chronologically, and when I got to Garbage, I knew I was getting into more experimental territory, both from the cover art and from the sound of the first track. At some point during the song, my headphones started malfunctioning, and in my right ear, a screeching whirring started playing at random rates. I remember thinking, wow, this is really experimental and out there. I was even more surprised when it continued through the rest of the EP. I thought that they had for some reason split the right track to have ear-splittingly loud, high-pitched whirring for the entire release. I remember being a bit embarrassed afterwards when I read the reviews online and saw no mention of such a thing, as I had misinterpreted an actual headphone malfunction as genius experimental music. Made me feel quite pretentious. At least I got a good story out of it, and now whenever I hear the first track, I'm reminded of the incident. You want to read the next one, Dan?
Yeah, sure. This one's from Robert, who writes, I used to drive a 2004 Honda Accord with a busted 6-disc changer CD player, or the player wasn't always busted, but became busted one fateful day when I felt like throwing on Chiastic Slide. Something broke inside the changer that day and made it unable to eject CDs, so Chiastic and 3 other discs, which was Acid Rap, The Flaming Lips, The Terror, and Disc 4 of Suitcase by Guided by Voices, became lodged in my car for the rest of its life. Thankfully, they still played fine, and I gained a deep appreciation for Chiastic out of circumstance.
And the last one is from Anton, who writes, I listened to your podcast about the Bass Cadet remixes and listener mail and had to share a story about the time I found out about Autechre. I had just moved to my current rooftop flat 2 years ago. First album I listened to was Amber because Spotify put Montreal into my recommended playlists a lot. I just found out about Shawnee and Robbie and fell in love with them over time. My gas heater stopped working late October when I really dug Amber, and my landlord let some technician try to repair it, which didn't work because the piezo switch on it wasn't working anymore. It was a cold winter, and the broken piezo switch was the reason I sat there in the cold for the whole winter. It's an old heater, and spare parts were pretty hard to get, they said. It came in March when it was getting warm again. At this time, I always thought about this fucking heater whenever I listened to the album. The squeezing of the piezo sends an electric pulse to ignite the gas. If you're curious, I uploaded a video with this fucking thing. Really, fuck this thing. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on these stories in particular, though I am kind of curious, Dan, if you think you'd hate Chiastic if it was stuck in your CD player for years, or if you'd hate Amber if it soundtracked the coldest winter of your life. But I wonder if you associate any Autechre releases with, you know, a really distinct time or event in your life.
To comment on the stories, the first one, the headphone thing, that's pretty great. You know, it reminds me of, people joking about like, liking their refrigerator running, you know, thinking right. It was sun or something, you know, the CD player, I think that would bug me. I would not want to listen to the same four records, especially the Guided by Voice, just one disc of a record.
I know.
That's even worse. But the association, I really can't think of any, honestly. I think it's because I mostly listen to Autechre singularly, because like we've talked about a few times here, my wife hates them. So it's mostly just, kind of at home reading or, laying in bed or something by myself. I guess me and my wife, we saw Autechre live, the Orlando show that was in the AE Live set. And like while we were at the show, all these people kept like taking their phones out, and they had like decimal meters, like they were just like really, but like mini groups that were not together did it. And we always, anytime my wife knows I'm listening to Autechre, she makes a snide comment about getting my decibel meter out. So I guess that counts.
That's good. Yeah. I've listened to Autechre like so much that it's like no longer associated with just one period really. But I mentioned on the Incunabula episode, like for some reason, whenever I hear Eggshell, I think of like driving home late at night from college classes and stuff like that. XI came out while I was living in London for a year, and just walking around feeling like I had turned into a computer was LSEC came out that summer that I was visiting Florida, and we were like working on a lot of music together, playing shows and stuff. So I remember like listening to tracks on that over and over again, and like writing down like, how could I rip this song off? But yeah, I do appreciate these stories. Very, very funny. If anybody has similar, memories or traumatic events to share, send them our way. Gonkastpod@gmail.com.
All right. Anton actually sent another email after our Chiastic Slide episode. He writes, there's one thing I didn't understand in your podcast. The cover is incredible because it reflects the album really great. For me, Chiastic has a really Arctic and cold feeling, like being stranded on a strange Arctic planet. Just listen to Redic AC, which sounds like a lot of snow being squished and stuff. The mixing and noise, which sounds really strange in general, makes me think of ice and snow a lot. The distorted and hopeless attribute that feels like hiding in a cave, ice cave for monsters. I think the cover really shows this beautifully with an unknown, uncanny shape and a desolate, far-reaching snow biome. But I also didn't know about the trivia of how the artwork was made, so that didn't ruin it for me. Also, I feel like showing a dark and uncanny album doesn't always have to go with dark colors.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we both said that we don't really care much for the Chiastic artwork, and after reading this email, you know, I like spent some time just staring at it, and you know, the problem is that I guess I never really gave it serious thought until I already knew about, you know, what it is, which is like buildings and stuff that have just been turned into like abstract shapes. And I just don't really know what to make of that. I guess if I was just looking at it like, you know, trying to associate these abstract shapes with something, I guess I can see that, something like whiteout conditions in a snowstorm or something. If, you know, once winter gets going here in Indiana, maybe I'll walk around in a snowstorm while listening to it and see if it works. But, you know, I just don't know. It looks like maybe that shape is like, I don't know, some kind of like weird cave painting or something, but it's just like, there's so little there that I can't even like associate it with the sounds that much.
Yeah, it's there's like not a lot to grasp onto. I never thought about the coldness of it, but I live in Florida and I've lived in Florida my entire life, so I don't know what snow sounds like being squished. I've seen snow literally 4 times in my life, so a lot of things don't bring up those thoughts for me, you know.
Well, I'm glad some people appreciate the artwork anyway. Okay, last email. It's a sign/plus theory from Colin. It's a little long, so we'll break it up. He writes, "Your thoughts and challenges with sign and plus as a double entity intrigued me because the order the duo released the albums in made perfect sense to me personally. I read a lot of folks saying during the speculation that they hoped plus would be a manic beat-heavy album that sign could serve as a comedown to. It seems like you two and many other listeners are enjoying it that way, which is great, but my two cents are that plus is actually the comedown record, as to me it's much more fun and less heavy to listen to despite the tripped out experiment. It's dry, fresh, and clean, where sign is more heavy and enveloping. The way I see it, and this is assuredly me reading into the albums in our current socio-political context, sign has these Blade Runner vibes that feel distinctly dystopian and apocalyptic. It's a very melancholic, reflective listen, and generally makes me think of some alien planet that has run its course and been consumed by a disaster, a la how Venus seems to have succumbed to global warming long ago."
Yeah, Colin continues in this narrative thread, plus then feels like a space journey that the survivors of the planet are taking toward a new and hopefully better future while still reflecting on the damage of their home world, hence the callbacks to sign tracks like I pre-escape. The album feels like acceleration, warp speed, distant objects gliding out the window. I feel like it's a necessary uplift after the somewhat depressing final stretch of Sign, which I love. I also disagree that TM1 Open isn't a nice concluding track, as I'm totally enthralled with the way the acid arpeggios fall away, leaving us with this peaceful but still melancholic and very minimal melody. However, I also don't think that there were necessarily meant to be listened to in a 2-hour chunk, which is why they weren't dropped at once. I think you can see them as two sides of the same coin, which is what's so great about them.
Yeah, you know, I gave this some thought, and you know, I think I can agree that Sign feels like an ending and Plus feels like something new is starting up. So you can solve the dilemma of like how to put them together either by A, listening to Plus first and then Sign, which is kind of like how I like to do it after you suggested that when we were talking about it. I think that makes a lot of sense listening to it that way. Or, you know, you can do it what he's done here and think of, okay, something is ending with Sign and then something new is beginning, and you can devise some story, you know, some optimistic story of like something terrible has happened and now something good has happened. I could sort of imagine, honestly, you know, even beyond that, like narrative stuff, you know, we might, let's say that over the next 10 years, Autechre releases a bunch of albums and it becomes clear that Plus was like the first step on their new trajectory. You know what I mean? I could imagine us thinking forever, oh, Sign was the end of their 2010s era and Plus was the beginning of 2020s Autechre, you know, but with just these two, it's like not enough of a start for me to listen to them in this way.
Yeah, I get you. And yeah, you very well could be true. You know, it's just like we don't have all the necessary information yet. I I said, I prefer listening to it in the plus sign configuration or each individually. But yeah, I mean, his narrative, I think works. You know, there's the song that references the like Deckard's Dream synthesizer, which which in turn references Blade Runner. So I guess he's maybe not entirely far off, you know.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I guess I have some like hesitation to say that, okay, this bad thing happens in the first one and then something new is starting in the second one. But all of the brooding, melancholic sounds in the second one are them thinking back about the bad thing that happened on the first one. You know, it's like you can sort of explain any inconsistency that way, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Have your thoughts, just out of curiosity, changed at all on Sign and Plus as a whole or separately? Or, you know, it's been a few more weeks now.
No, I mean, honestly, I've not listened to them as much as I would have if I wasn't doing a Odd Ticker podcast where I got to listen to other records.
Yeah.
Just to avoid confusing myself. But I have been putting them on here and there. And, you know, I'm still loving them. And I don't think, you know, my feelings have changed all that much. What about you?
Yeah. You know, it's weird because I still don't think I understand Plus as an album. You know, it doesn't like hang together exactly for me yet. But for some reason, I feel like I like Plus more than Sign at this point, just because the highs are so high on it. You know, there's occasionally on Reddit and We Are the Music Makers and stuff, people will put up these, you know, little polls, like, which do you like better? And I just find myself voting for Plus. To my surprise, you know, I feel like I'm crazy, but, you know, the track Metaz Form 8 from Sign, which is like a highlight for a lot of people, it's like the one track I can't get into on that album. And it feels like the turning point of the album or something. It's just like kind of like drifting prettiness and nothing is like really blowing my mind there. And even like the weird things that don't seem to fit on Plus are still like exciting and interesting to me.
Yeah, I mostly agree. You know, I'm liking Plus more, I think. I agree that it's not as like cohesive as a record, but you're right, those highs are so high that, you know, any sort of low is I think swept away. Sign I'm enjoying a lot more as like a you know, like a while I'm reading kind of music or just relax, you know, it works really well in that respect, and I think that's how I've been using it that way mostly, you know, since it came out.
Yeah, well, that's all the emails for today. You know, I don't know, we're going a little over, but I wonder, Dan, do you want to just talk for a second? You know, we had a listener, Brandon, I think it was, told us about how Rizdio from Triropete is actually a reference to the Boss RSD-10, and you were looking at videos that got so stoked you had to buy it.
Yeah, I mean, he made somebody some money off eBay. I mean, he told me about this thing, and we've talked about it, like me and you both make experimental music, and I haven't bought anything in a while, and I was looking at some videos, looking it up, and it's like really wild. So I got my hands on one, and it's fucking really cool. I don't know why it's not so famous. You know, there's really not even that many YouTube videos on it. I really was searching pretty hard. I did post just a little the day I got it. I just was trying to learn it, and I posted a quick little couple clips or two on our Instagram, so you could check it there. But it's just a really neat noise maker. I don't really know how you'd use it for you know, normal music, you know, like guitar or something.
Yeah, true.
maybe that's why it's not that famous, but I'm glad it's not, because it was affordable and pretty cool.
All right, well, Dan recommended and Odd Ticker recommended, I guess.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, quick note, if you emailed this and we didn't read it today, it's because we think it'll fit better on a future episode in the context of, you know, upcoming albums on our slate. But don't worry, we're gonna make sure to get to them all. And special thanks to all the people who have written us to explain how Max MSP works. We're still like rereading these emails and trying to work our head around it, but we will get into that more in the next episode.
All right, on that note, if you've got any Odd Ticker opinions, hot takes to share, any of that, email us gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Next episode, a little over a week, LP5 and EP7. Again, send us your thoughts, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out by subscribing, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up on YouTube, stay connected, Twitter, Instagram, all that is @gonkcastpod, and we'll see you soon.
See ya.